morning, Unity DC.
Good morning.
How are y'all doing today? Awesome. It's really great to be here with all of you. I'm grateful for Reverend Sylvia inviting me to come and be a guest speaker. I've spoken here a few times before, but that was when I was living in Massachusetts, and it was a few years ago. So I moved here. I'm a DC person now. I'm still getting used to that. Yeah, thank you. It's different here than it is in New England. You all don't have much snow. And when you do have something that resembles snow, let's just say it's an event. You know, my family and I moved here, and you know, there was one day there was like a hint of heavy rain and high winds, and my son's school was closed. We're looking at each other. Anyway, so it's nice to be here. It's warmer here. I like that. Can't complain about that. Anyway, it's lovely to be here. Thank you for being with me today. I'm very much looking forward to giving this talk. I'm like looking down, there I am, and I look up there, and there I am. Gosh, your AV team is amazing, though. Look around, right? It's amazing. Thumbs up. I'm not down there. That one stopped working, so I'm a little bit relieved about that. Anyway, I should start my talk. Should I start my talk this morning? What do you think? So I was in meditation this week thinking, what am I going to bring to these people? And what kept coming to me was one of my favorite quotes by Albert Einstein. And Albert Einstein once penned, "I want to know the mind of God. Everything else is just the details." Oh, she's coming to fix it. No, I really kind of liked it that it wasn't working. It was like, okay, there was a little bit less of me. I was not in stereo. See, I'm your special needs speaker today. I have attention deficit disorder, so she's over here, and I'm like, what's she doing? I'm going to be back with you as soon as she's done. No, I'm going to try to carry on. No, really, no kidding. I was diagnosed. There we go. Now there's more of me. There we go. It's that side. All right, I'm going to try to focus. I have my son sitting there like, "Mom, don't embarrass me." Oh, my gosh. Has anyone ever parented a teenager? Yeah. All right. We'll gather down here for some prayer after church. Yeah, it's all good. Now, I'm glad he's here today. Thank you for coming. Love my family. Thank you. To make it even worse, his basketball coach and one of his favorite teachers came as well. So he's got his basketball coach and his one of his favorite teachers here. Yeah. Anyway, so where was I? Albert Einstein. "I want to know the mind of God." And then he finishes that thought with, "Everything else is just the details." I mean, think about that for a minute, right? I want to know the mind of God. Everything else is just the details. Now, I don't know about you, but I think somehow if we went down on H Street or out, you know, someplace in the city, and we pooled a bunch of people and you said, "What do you want to know more than anything?" Somehow, I don't think it would be, "I want to know the mind of God." And in fact, I would even argue that probably your mind is not all that occupied with wanting to know the mind of God. What are you occupying your mind with? So I've wondered a lot, what was Einstein doing when he penned that? You know, was he, you know, hunched over his desk in some dark corner of his office in Princeton, at Princeton University, working on the theory of relativity, and he got so frustrated that he just threw up his hands and said, "Ah, I just want to know the mind of God. Everything else is just the details." Right? Or was he walking along the Jersey Shore near Princeton and at sunrise, maybe, at the ocean, and is captivated by the beauty and the splendor of nature? And in awe did he pen, "I want to know the mind of God. Everything else is just the details." And I wonder what came first. Did Einstein have such a thirst for knowing the mind of God that he spent and devoted his life into creating a comprehensive understanding of how the universe works in his theory of relativity? Or was it in his thirst for science and wanting to understand how the universe works that he came upon, there's a beautiful organizing principle, the mind of God? Which came first? Well, I don't really know, but what I found in my research for this talk is that, in fact, Einstein penned those words on his deathbed. With his failing strengths and only a few hours left to live, he asked for two things: his glasses and his notebook and pen. And he wrote, I want to know the mind of God. Everything else is just the details. I love our unity teachings, right? Because we think a lot about how we're using our mind. In fact, one of our principal teachings in unity is the metaphysical trinity: mind, idea, and expression. Isn't that awesome? The metaphysical trinity: mind, idea, and expression, but not mind like your little yummy, yummy, yumma mind, not that one. Mind like the mind of God, the orchestrating, animating energy of the universe, meaning the mind, the one mind that you are and that I am and that God is. The one mind that generates what Charles Fillmore calls our only currency. Ideas, says Charles Fillmore, are our currency. So the mind of God generates ideas that we catch, that are given specifically to you, to me. My ideas are not your ideas. Your ideas are not my ideas. So you receive the ideas, divine idea, that then your path in life is to bring forth in holy expression. Don't y'all wish it was that seamless? Right? What happens somewhere between that beautiful, orchestrating, animating life force energy of the universe? Like, we don't wonder. It's spring now. We don't wonder what's happening next. Summer's coming. The sun goes down. We don't wonder, is the sun coming? Nature animates and organizes itself. And yet somewhere we think we got to worry about all the details. We got to get all worked up about every little thing. Right? And instead of catching that divine idea and bringing it forth in divine expression, what do y'all do? What do you do? You worry, you argue, you say, not me, not now, I don't think I can, maybe I shouldn't. We do all this busyness, right? So I have to ask you today, how are you using your mind? That's the question that we're going to dwell in today. How are you using my mind? It's an interesting question, isn't it? Like, maybe you're even thinking, like, well, what do you mean, how do I use my mind, Jackie? I just have my mind. It's like saying, how do you use your vision? Well, I don't use my vision. I just have my vision. How do you use your balance? Well, I don't use balance. I just have balance. How do you use your mind? Well, I don't use my mind. I just have my mind. In fact, you may even go so far as to say, well, I can't help it, Jackie. It's just the way I think. Or I can't help it. That's just the way I feel. How many of you might have said that ever in your lifetime and you're willing to tell the truth about it? Yeah, there's like one person right here that's honest. The rest of you need to stay longer. Yeah, the rest of you need to stay longer. Yeah, Reverend Charlotte's like, yeah, that's right. I got that. Right? We walk around saying, like, oh, I can't help it. That's just the way I think. Science and our spiritual principles has been telling, our spiritual principles has been telling us what? For 150 years, 130 years that the Unity Movement's been around, that our thoughts are prayers. Be careful what you're praying. Right? And now science is getting right on board to show us that, in fact, you can, and I will go so far as to say you must, change how you think. Because the course of human evolution depends on us elevating our consciousness back to the divinity from which we came. The course of human evolution depends on that, on you growing in consciousness back to the divinity from which you came. And let me tell you how I define consciousness. I say it's your beat that creates your vibe. Your beat is your beliefs, emotions, attitudes, and thoughts. Your beat, beliefs, emotions, attitudes, and thoughts. Your beat creates your vibe, which creates your life. So however much of you've been walking around like, well, I can't help it, I'm going to talk to you today that not only can you help it, you must help it. That it is your spiritual duty and blessing, by the way, your spiritual duty and blessing to raise your consciousness, your beat, to elevate your beliefs, to elevate your emotions, to change your attitudes and to master your thoughts. Interesting topic, isn't it? I'll be done by round 5 today. Yeah, it's all good. Nah, you're lucky. I got to drive back to Massachusetts today, so I'm gonna pack in a lot in these next few minutes. Okay, y'all ready? Put your seatbelts on. Let's do this. So I'm gonna do it. Let's do this. I'm gonna do it by talking about 3 different areas. One, I'm gonna draw. She's laughing over here. I like it. Your music was beautiful, by the way. Don't laugh, because then I can't pay attention to everybody else, and they'll. Just happens. Anyway, where was I? Oh, right. So I'm going to draw from 3 different areas. My son is signing to my spouse. She does have ADHD. Yeah, I do. I wasn't kidding, honey. I'm not on meds any longer because of these spiritual truths and principles. I'll get to that, right? Stay on your meds. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking about me. I have to be careful. I know. Now my son's like, Mom, you're embarrassing me. All right, good. So I'm going to do this from three different ways. First of all, we're going to talk about spiritual truths and what spirituality tells us about managing our mind, using our mind to train our brain to raise our consciousness, using your mind to train your brain. We're going to talk about spiritual principle. Then we're going to talk about science, what science is going to bring. And then we're going to talk about some stories to make it real and relevant. Okay? So you remind me in case I forget what I'm going to talk about today. Good. So the first, let's talk a little bit about what a spiritual teaching tells us, okay? And what A Course in Miracles, you all know ACIM, A Course in Miracles. I think there's a study group here at this church, yeah? What ACIM says, I love this quote, you may think you're responsible for what you do, but not for what you think. How many of you think that? Well, I'm responsible for what I do, but well, you know, I'm not responsible for what I think. ACIM goes on to say, the truth is, you are responsible for what you think because it is only at that level that you have choice. What you do stems from what you think. Right? What you do stems from what you think. So you have to be responsible for what you think and how you think. And, you know, people think, well, I can't help it. I can't help it. I try to meditate, but I can't quiet my mind. No, that's the whole point. That's the whole point. I love to teach people, see, it's so simple about how you change your thinking that people think it can't be that easy. It really is that simple. You do 3 things. You catch yourself thinking what you're thinking that you don't want to be thinking. Right? Which requires what? Awareness. Thank you very much. Awareness. You got to be aware of what you're thinking. So you catch it. And then the second thing is you challenge it. Oh, really? Do you want to think that way? Where's that thinking going to lead you? Is that thought going to lead you to the life that you want to have? Is that thought going to support you? Is that thought going to elevate you? Is that a God thought? You challenge it. And then the third thing, you change it. It's that simple. And I'm doing it all the time. Oh my gosh. It's very busy in here. I'm never bored. It's just very entertaining, my inner world, because I'm constantly doing that. You know, it's a little schizophrenic, but that, like, so you are responsible for what you think. So when you catch yourself in that thinking that's not God thought, you simply change it. You catch it, you challenge it, and then you change it. What's that book I'm reading right now? You Are Not Your Brain, Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz. It's a whole book that says what I just said to you in 2 sentences. I saved you about a week and a half of reading. Right? And he's a psychiatrist. He did a lot of research. For those of you who are science and spirituality geeks like I am, he's a really good author to follow, Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz. Anyway, great stuff out there. So, A Course in Miracles, you think you are only responsible for what you do. You are, in fact, responsible for what you think. Philippians. So you're like, well, okay, how do I think? Well, Scripture will tell you. Philippians 4:6, do not worry about a thing. How do you know you're living a spiritual life? Well, you know you're living a spiritual life when you stop worrying. The two do not live together, beliefs, emotions, attitudes, and thoughts. Worry is an emotion that is not of God. You are here to make manifest the glory of God, not to make manifest the glory of your ego. Right? So Philippians 4:6, do not worry about a thing. 1 Thessalonians 5:18, in all things give thanks. Going back to Philippians, do not worry about a thing, but in all things put your prayer and petition before God, giving thanks in advance of your good that is to come. This is a really good prescription for how to use your mind. You know, I keep a gratitude list. Many of you probably do as well. How many of you write gratitudes for things in advance? Right? It's great, isn't it? It's a great practice. I'm grateful in advance for my son getting through high school. There we go. See, this is why I do this, right? Best reason about being a spiritual teacher and speaker is so that you get to live these principles more and more fully. I'm talking to myself today. I'm glad you're here to listen, but I'm just really talking to myself. All right. One more. So Buddhist tradition, here at Unity, we embrace all spiritual traditions, all faith traditions. The Buddha. Do you know that the Buddha has 84,000 precepts about how to discipline your mind? 84,000 instructions on how to train the mind to be free from worry, to be happy, to be engaged. 84,000 precepts about how to free yourself from the energies of your human ego. And one of my favorite precepts is simply this: a disciplined mind brings happiness. A disciplined mind brings happiness. So for those of you who said, oh, I tried meditation, but I can't, stop it. Of course you can't. That's why they call it a practice. You know, I teach meditation all the time in the programs that I run and with my coaches that I train. And they all say this: well, I've tried that before. I just can't do it. I can't quiet my mind. That's the whole point. So if you don't have a regular time that you focus on quieting your mind, and by the way, I know it's not going to be quiet. That's the point. Coming back to that quiet space, your mind goes off. Coming back to that quiet space, your mind goes off. That is meditation. If you don't have one, you won't have the tools you need to discipline your mind. Your thoughts are literally thinking you most often. How many of you can relate to that? Your thoughts are thinking you. And you know that, all of a sudden you catch yourself and you're like, yeah, who's thinking that? You are. Now, how do you stop it? 3 steps. What's the first one? Catch it. Second one, challenge it. Third one, there you go, you're done. Goodbye. But I have a few more things to say. All right, good. So, ACIM, you think you're responsible for what you do, but not for what you think. The truth is, you are responsible for what you think. The Bible, Philippians, do not worry about a thing. In all things, your prayers and petitions before God, giving thanks in advance. 1 Thessalonians, in all things give thanks. This is the will of God for you in Christ Jesus, right? So that's how you think. That is how you use your mind. And then Buddha, a disciplined mind brings happiness. So let's see what science is bearing out about this. It is, I just think it's such an exciting time to be alive. Have you guys heard about the magic of neuroplasticity? Yes. Right? Isn't that the coolest thing? For those of you who haven't, I'm sure you have, but what it means is that we used to think that like our brains are kind of like done, cooked and baked somewhere around 20, 25, 30 years old. Like it's done. And then it's just downhill from there, right? And what we now know is that we can continue to create and break down neural pathways that don't serve us, habitual thought patterns, and rebuild neural pathways so that our default mode network, that means the yammering mind, it's called the default mode network, your yammering mind, so that your yammering mind elevates in consciousness from chronic focus on where you're getting your next fix, whether it's in front of a screen or whether it's a drug or alcohol, thinking about that. When am I going to? I'm going to. When's the next time? Some of you have been there. Or when it's thinking about, when am I getting my next dollar? How am I going to pay that bill? Am I going to be okay? Elevating from these lower levels of worry and obsession to the higher levels of, God, life is beautiful. Life is magical. I'm in awe of life itself. I want you to imagine what it's like living that way. Because what we now know through the magic of neuroplasticity is that you can use your mind to train your brain. Just those three simple steps that I already told you. You see that thinking that's not supporting you? That's not God thought. That's ego. That's just not me. You challenge it. Hey, that's not going to get me where I want to go. And you change it. It's really that simple. But it's not easy to do. And that's why people think, oh, that can't. There's got to be something else. There's got to be something else. There's nothing else. Learn to quiet your mind. A disciplined mind leads to a happy life. That's what the Buddha said. That's true. So a couple things I want to show you. And so that's one in science. Second thing is the Framingham Heart Study, 1948, Framingham, Massachusetts. They did, the famous Framingham Heart Study in studying the impact of happiness and emotional well-being on the heart and lifestyle on the heart. And what they found, you're going to be blown away with this. What they found is that women who believed they were prone to heart disease, even when they had no behavioral risk factors and no biological risk factors, right? So no family history, they weren't smokers, they got some exercise, you know, they did all the right things. But when they believed they were prone to heart disease, they ended up actually having heart disease twice as often as the control group, simply because they believed it. What does that mean? They used their mind to train their brain to impact their body that harmed them. They believed they would get heart disease, therefore they did. Why? Oh, my neighbor had it. Oh, the girl down the street had it. Oh, my teacher in second grade had it. Therefore, I'm going to get it. Like, what? But what you believe is what you begin to create over and over and over again. A 2011 study of AIDS patients found, I love this, that those men and women who had AIDS who believed in a benevolent God versus a harsh, judgmental God, those that believed in a benevolent God had 1/3 less viral markers in their blood than those who believed in a harsh, punitive, judgmental God. Just that, with the same exact treatments, by the way, same exact course of the illness, those that believed in a benevolent, loving God had less of the virus in their bloodstream. They used their mind to train their brain to change their bodies. It's amazing, isn't it? The question is, what do you believe? But let's ground this into some stories. In 1999, Amy Purdy was a world-class, up-and-coming young snowboarder. How many of you know her story? Have seen her TED Talk? A handful of you? So Amy Purdy was a up-and-coming world-class snowboarder. She was set to go to the Olympics, probably favored to win the gold, one of the best snowboarders in the world. And somewhere before the Olympic trials, during her training, she was taken horribly sick with a form of meningitis that attacked her circulatory system. And she was horribly sick, was rushed to the hospital, and the doctors told her parents she had 2% chance of survival. And her parents were, you know, obviously grief-stricken, but they had a firm belief that she would pull through. And in fact, she did. She came to, about 10 days, 2 weeks later, came out of a coma. She was still alive, but both of her legs had been amputated because the meningitis virus had attacked her circulatory system, and she had blood loss to her lower limbs. So a world-class snowboarder whose identity was entirely wrapped up in her legs, her feet, her ability to be athletic and snowboarding, had lost both of her legs. In an extraordinary story, she says that she really didn't know what she was going to do, but the first thing that she knew she needed to do was just learn to walk again. So instead of rejecting what had happened and rejecting her prosthetic legs, she actually embraced them and started very quickly, learned how to walk again. Her athleticism, her youth, her strength, learned how to walk again very quickly. But that wasn't enough for her. She wanted to board. So she tried snowboarding on the prosthetic legs that she had, and she found out it was really, really painful, and it was just a hot mess. She wasn't able to do that. So without any background in electrical engineering or any background in mechanical engineering or design, she made her own prosthetic legs. She made her own prosthetic legs, and she said, as I was going through this trials of, like, you know, trying this one and it didn't work, trying that one and it didn't work, she said, every night when I would go to bed, I was snowboarding. I wasn't snowboarding in my mind. I was in my body, seeing the turns, feeling the propulsion going down the mountain, feeling the wind on my face and my hair flying back. I was snowboarding night after night after night after night. And in 2014, at the Paralympic Games, she medaled as a Paralympic athlete. It's an amazing story. Now, what she did was she used her mind to train her brain to be able to do something. Her brain didn't have any neural pathways for how to snowboard or ski or go down a mountain on prosthetic limbs. She didn't know how to do that. Romans 12:2 says, "Don't be conformed of this world, but be ye transformed by what? The renewing of your mind." Be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. What did Amy Purdy do? Oh, well, she's going to die. 98% chance she's going to die. 2% chance she's going to live. Don't be conformed by this world. Oh, she'll never walk again. She's going to have prosthetic legs. Oh, I'm sorry. She's not going to be able to snowboard. Amy, you just have to accept this is your new identity. This is your new fate. Where are people telling you no? Where are people telling you maybe you're not enough, you're not able to do that, that's maybe too big, maybe you should hold back, be careful, don't follow that dream. Don't be conformed of this world. Be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. Do you know that the word transformed comes from the Greek root metamorphomai? That means to create outer change based on inner change. Amy Purdy was able to create the result that she did, winning an international Olympic medal after losing both legs, because she was transformed. Not only transformed in her body, she was transformed in her mind. In fact, she had to be transformed in her mind first. I laid there night after night after night, and I was not laying in my bed. I was going down that mountain. What do we call that in Unity? Spiritual power of imagination. Your imaginal capacity is what creates your life, but too often you're using your imagination not for what God has called you here for, but to support all of the worldly things that you're worried about. Be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. I ask you again this morning, how are you using your mind? We were getting along just fine until then, weren't we? This is a challenging conversation. You know, in fact, if you are not somewhat in awe right now of these concepts and these principles, you're just not paying enough attention. You can change your brain by using your mind. What's the difference between mind and brain? The difference is your brain is the organ that fulfills the function of your mind. Just like the eye is the organ that fulfills the function of sight. Yes? So your brain isn't I can't help it, I just think that way. No. The more you connect with divine mind, idea, expression, the Holy Trinity, when you connect with divine mind, how do you do that? Notice when your thinking is not of God. Catch that thinking, challenge it, and change it. That's it. Be grateful in all things. Don't worry about a thing. Oh, gosh, do I have work to do. All right, let's move on. Next thing. So, I have a new crush, my new favorite sports phenom. His name is Alex Honnold, and he is a world-class free climber, which means a person that rock climbs with no ropes. I think they're crazy. How about you? So how many of you know the Alex Honnold story? A bunch of you should. No, just a handful. Okay. There was just a really cool documentary that was made about him called Free Solo. If you haven't seen it, do it. Not this afternoon. It's too nice out tonight after dark. You can pull it up on Netflix, I think. Movie called Free Solo. So Alex Honnold is a rock climber. He started rock climbing around 10 years old. He's in his mid-30s now. And last year, about a year and a half ago, he did an athletic feat that is being called the most extraordinary athletic feat in human history. The most extraordinary athletic feat in human history. And what Alex did is he's a free climber, and he had done all of these really challenging climbs without ropes. and lived to tell about it. And yet there was one that he had wanted to do. It was at Yosemite National Park called El Capitan, and it's a 3,000 sheer cliff of granite. Now, what do we know about granite? It's slippery. You are paying attention. Good. I like that. It's slippery. So rock climbers don't climb El Capitan without ropes. Why? Because you can slip and fall, and if you do, it's all over. And that had been kind of in the back of Alex's mind for a decade. And he prepared for a decade to do this climb. And he started by doing it with ropes, getting to know it really, really well. And then he would do sections of it without ropes. So he'd, you know, climb up to a certain level, take off his ropes, and then do a section of it without ropes, and then rope himself back up. 10 years he worked on this. And when he felt he was just about ready to actually try it, there was one part of the climb that he just felt, I don't know. I don't know if I can do it. Because what he had to do in that one part of the climb, the only way to go from point A to point B, was to either hold himself on by his fingertips with very, very small holds and kick his leg out. Here we go. Kick his leg out 90%. That's not so bad for a girl my age. Kick his leg out 90% and then put all of his weight onto that foot and launch himself up to the next hold. Or alternately, do something that's like a hop, where he literally lets go all of his hands and feet and moves to the next level, and he was at 1,500 feet in the air. So he tried both of them with ropes and tried them and tried them, and he repeatedly kind of, you know, didn't do so well on the hop, so he decided to do the one with the leg kick. And he was able to start doing that, 1,500 feet in the air. So how did he prepare for that? What he says in interviews with him is he spent 90 hours seeing that move in his mind, that one move. 90 hours. How many of you have spent 90 hours doing anything with your mind other than worrying? I'm just saying. Not so much, by the way, over here too. 90 hours seeing that one move. Well, he did it, and he succeeded. And throughout the process of him, he was gaining a lot of notoriety, as you can imagine, preparing for this amazing climb. And some neuroscientists got very interested in him, and they wanted to do a scan of his brain. And so Alex said, yeah, sure. They wanted to see what is it about this guy that he is able to do these things that are just, I mean, death-defying, terrifying things that he's doing. So they did a brain scan on Alex, and what they found is that his amygdala is actually smaller than the normal average adult, to which the neuroscientist said, the amygdala is the fear center and emotion center of your brain, and his was smaller than most people's, to which the neuroscientist said, there you go. He's able to do these things because his amygdala is small, to which Alex said, my amygdala is smaller because of how I have used my brain. I have spent my entire life doing things that most people would never even conceive of. And the more I do that, the less I'm afraid to do it. He changed his brain structure by how he was using his mind. This is just unbelievable what we have the capacity to do. To me, this is how you make your life a living prayer. People always ask me, Jackie, you know, I'm a spiritual teacher, so I say, what's your favorite spiritual practice? Or what should I be doing in my spiritual practice so that I rise in consciousness? And I simply say, make your life a living prayer. In every conversation, in every interaction, are you being loving? Are you being kind? Are you being patient? Are you being faithful? Including, by the way, with yourself. That's always the one that's the hardest. That's always the one that's the most challenging. Make your life a living prayer. So why am I so passionate about this? Why do I teach and speak and do all this stuff on these principles? Because these principles have given me the quality of my life. They've given me my life. You know, I spent my 20s and into my 30s, into my 40s, back and forth, you know, episodes of chronic intermittent depression, on, off and on medication, in and out of therapy, doing this, doing that, which of course led to years and years of addiction. And I say, I am recovered. Thank you, God. I am grateful. I depart from the 12 steps a little bit. I am recovered. I am healthy. I am no longer on any medications. I've been diagnosed with, you know, this and that, and depression and addictions and ADHD, diagnosed with this and that. I learned to use my mind to train my brain. And it's that that gives us the quality of your life. And that may sound all woo-woo and scientific, but that's the spiritual law. It's spiritual practice. Our thoughts are prayers. That is what you are here to do. To unroot any smallness, lack, limitation, worry, fear, weariness, chaos, overwhelm. That's not what you're here for. You are here to make manifest the glory of God. And you do that by raising your consciousness, your beliefs, emotions, attitudes, and thoughts back to the divinity from which we all came. It's a blessing to be here with all of you today. I'm grateful and grateful and grateful. And thank you for the time I've had with you.